about what was going to happen. And so he committed to that. He was going to work on himself and not even look at women. He wasn't going to be engaged. He figured the time would come when, it would work out. A week later, he met Judy. They began to date, and they got married. And at the time he was telling that story, they'd been married over 20 years. So, that's I took that because I at the time he told me that I was going through a divorce. I had been through a divorce, and I was working on I stopped thinking, even thinking about it. I just worked on myself for several years. And then one day in the Jack and Jerry show, the class that you used to teach at the in the basement of Unity, I looked up one day and there was this woman standing in the back of the room and she was staring at me. And we just stared at each other as she walked across the room and then walked out the door. Well, it took a couple weeks before we actually met. One day by chance, I sat down. The church was packed after the Jack and Jerry show. Which I hope you don't mind my calling it that, but it was a wonderful class. I went up to the church and it was packed. It was Easter or something, and I walked down the aisle and found one seat open. I sat, it actually was where I usually sat. I sat down, and she was sitting right next to me. And at the end of the service, this was the second row, I always liked the second pew. At the end of the service, we got up, and during the service, I had prayed to God. I said, "Look, if I'm supposed to ask her out, you better tell me. You better do something here, because I'm intimidated by her beauty, by the way she presented herself." Anyway, at the end of the service, I was so caught up in the service that I forgot she was there. I turned to go out, and it was packed. I couldn't get out the door, and so it took us a while walking together up the aisle to get out of the Unity Church. And she began to talk to me, asking me questions about what happened downstairs. And we got into this conversation. At the end of when we By the time we were downstairs, I said, "Are you I don't usually do this, but I usually want to get to know someone before I ask them out, but do you like the theater?" She said, "Yes." I said, "Well, I had to tickets to the theater on Saturday night. I was going to take my best friend Jim, but if you'd like to go, I would love to take you." And she said, "Oh, I love the theater. We've been together ever since. It'll be 14 years on February 14th. We'll be married for 14 years. We were together frequently during the 6 months leading up to that. And you, Jerry, of course, were the minister. You were the minister at our wedding, and I'm very grateful for that. So thanks for letting me share."
Thanks, John. You created that reality, right?
Wow.
A shorter version of that story, personal side. The first time I saw Margot, we were at a breathwork workshop. And I had been to a workshop like that before, so I was kind of a veteran. And I was walking around calming people's fears and just talking to people, which was kind of rare for me because I'm usually quite an introvert. And I walked by this little group of people where Margot and a couple of her friends were talking, and Margot looked up, and I looked at her, and the words that came out of my mouth were, "We've known one another before." No hesitation. The words just came. And from that point on, there was a creation of a relationship that neither one of us were looking for, or neither one of us expected. And yet there it is. We've known one another before. Great pickup line, especially for a monk.
That's pretty
You
good,
know.
Jerry. I give you props. That's good, man.
I couldn't help it. It was right there. I didn't think about it. Wasn't certainly didn't give it any thought. That phrase, that expression was just, we've known one another before. This does not
Sure.
mean that you don't recognize where you are harmed or how you are harmed or who brought you harm. It does mean that you understand that you are actually complicit to the events in your lives. I attracted this to myself for whatever reason, or I attracted this particular person. To make it really simple, we attracted one another to Sunday morning. This is not by chance. As expressed in 12-step literature, nothing, absolutely nothing in God's universe is left to chance. That doesn't mean that God is micromanaging our lives. It does mean, though, that everything that occurs, everything that happens in my life as well as yours is there for a reason. And it's a reason we created somehow or another beyond our own limited consciousness. These are opportunities to learn choices that were made, or in some cases, karmic experiences that you are seeking to utilize to learn. Nothing will be learned until it is first seen, until I first take responsibility for it. As long as I'm blaming somebody else out there or pointing my finger at somebody else, there's whatever lesson I've chosen to learn isn't going to be there for me. Nothing will be learned until it is first seen. Nothing will be recognized when you are seeking to deny it. And nothing new will be chosen when you are demanding the old menu based on prior circumstance and history, what you order from. Every moment is a moment of teaching and healing and learning. But you got to be awake, and I got to be aware enough to know that that's what's happening. I got to be open to it. Just like we are, I mean, I think that this particular gathering is a great example of that. That we chose to be here on Sunday morning. And whatever shows up in my mind, in my heart, in my experience, is something that I know that I have created or opened myself up to in order to be able to learn, in order to be able to heal. Nothing is happening by chance. The gift of this teaching in memory will continue later. We are going to teach you what memory is not and how to align to truth at the cost of the small self's desire to interpret what once was through a faulty lens with basis of fear. We thank you each for your presence. Stop now, please. Period, period, period. I could see peace instead of this. I could see love instead of this. I could see joy instead of, not an emotional sense. I mean, when the emotion is there, that's wonderful, that's nice. But we're not talking about the emotion, we're talking about the truth of joy, the truth of peace, the truth of courage, the truth of whatever virtue we're trying to manifest here. It comes from, it goes beyond the mind. I gave a talk at Unity last week on peace, world peace. And as I was putting that talk together, I recognized something that I wasn't quite aware of before. I said, can I be at peace and be grieving at the same time? And my soul answered yes. And so I went beyond the emotional self there, but I knew that to be the truth. I can be at peace and I can be grieving or doing any other piece of work that I've invented for myself. Can I do that and be at peace at the same time? Even though emotionally it seems contradictory. And of course, the answer to that is yes, I can. I can be at peace and I can be grieving at the same time. See, my emotional self says it's either one or the other. That's what my ego and my personality say. And my soul, my spirit says it doesn't have to be either one, it can be both. I can be experiencing both at the same time. And maybe that's part of my learning, is to learn that I can be at peace, even if I am grieving at the same time. Let's see, where are we here? Thinking about the title of this book, Innocence, and all the implications of that. That innocence is freedom. Innocence is not being encumbered by anyone or anything. There's no stuff. The Latin word for baggage is impedimenta, something that is impeding me, something that is holding me back. Being innocent, being an innocent, nothing is holding me back, nothing is getting in my way. I see with the eyes of the Christ. There's lots of different ways of putting that. I see with the eyes of the Christ. I see beyond thought. I see beyond my history. I see beyond what I might have told myself time and time again. What stands before you today is a new choice. I am willing. Remember, we talked about this, Jim, last time. I am willing to absolve myself for the memories I hold that have incorporated as personality that deny my true self. Let me say that again. What stands before you today is a new choice. I am willing to absolve myself for the memories that I hold that I've incorporated as personality that deny my true self. In other words, I'm still guilty. As in 12-step literature, we will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. In other words, I can still learn from it, but I'm not holding on to it as blame, shame, and guilt. It's just not there. I'm still working on that one. There are things in my life that I wish I could have done differently and that I haven't completely forgiven myself for. That deny my true self. My true self says, whatever happened, whatever you did, however wrong it might feel right now or seem to be right now, what would it be like to realize that you did it with the best of intentions? That at that moment in time, you could not have done it any differently. Really? Not there yet. But you get just a little bit of a hint of what it would be like to be free of that burden that I might have created for myself. I am willing to release an idea of what I have been. What I have been is simply an idea, not the truth. I am willing to release the an idea of what I have been, known through memory that claims me in separation. Guilt, fear, blame, shame are all ways of being separate from one another, and are all creations of separateness. I did something to you, or you did something to me. And as long as I am holding on to that in a particular way, I am separate. I am creating separateness from you, from me. Blame, shame, guilt. I am choosing to know myself in the high order of the upper room, wherein all things are made new. There are some things in my life that I have regretted, that I have made peace with. That still remain part of my memory or part of my history, part of my perception, let's put it that way. But there's nothing else there. There's no attachment. There's no anger, there's no fear connected with. One of the incidents that I know I've shared this before in my life, but I was a little kid. I was probably about 3 or 4 years old. It was Sunday morning. I was at church, Catholic church, with my father and my mother. And I think we might have been a little bit late because I know we were in the back. And I'm not sure what was going on, but I was getting a little bit bored, as any 3 or 4 year old might do. And so I was getting kind of squirmy, and I'm not sure what it was I was doing, but I was annoying the hell out of my father. And I remember he picked me up and he started bringing me outside. And in the back of my mind, I said, "Oh, good, I'm getting out of that situation," which I couldn't stand. But I also noticed he was holding me very tightly. Holding me, not in a loving way, but holding me very tightly. Got outside and he just beat my ass. And then brought me back in church. And for years, I held on to the injustice of that. I was 4 years old, for God's sake. And I worked on that one, and I worked on that one. I worked on letting that go on that one, on healing that, worked on surrender. And there came a time when I was able to touch that memory, and there was nothing else there. It was something that happened to me in my life. There was no anger, no fear, no shame, no guilt, no wanting to be different. It was a piece of my history that no longer affected me with any other kind of emotion or feeling. It was just not there anymore. So it's my interpretation, that's one of the things that they're getting with here, is that we work and we work and we work and we defuse memory or the energy around memory until it's just memory. It's in some ways it's meaningless, it's just a piece of my history. It doesn't mean a whole lot right now. In fact, it doesn't mean anything right now, except the fact that it's healed.
Jerry,
Yes.
can I just make note of something here? And it's on the page back, 542, and in that second paragraph beginning, as the collective, that's a how I'm sorry I glanced at that out of the I out of what you were talking about, but it feels like that paragraph there says exactly, speaks of a large collective situation that we are in.
Yes.
Yeah, it's worth really contemplating that paragraph.
Thank you. What I'm thinking, what I'm reminded of is that let's take the idea or the sense of war, that I am certainly responsible for part of my creation there. At the same time, there is a collective consciousness that I have also been part of creating that believes, incorrectly believes, that there really is no such thing as world peace or the possibility of world peace. Because I realized that was a part of my stuckness and might have been part of yours. Until we have overcome that to a certain degree and saying, I am willing to believe in world peace as much as I possibly can in these circumstances right now. Because I have also been responsible for creating that conscious, that global consciousness that says this can happen. I'm shifting gears here. I am believing in the possibility of what it says in A Course in Miracles, I could see peace instead of this. So I am creating a new, not just a new individual consciousness, I'm creating a new collective consciousness. And I am contributing to that every time I feed into the possibility, let's say, that the world can be at peace. Again and again and again and again. I don't have to be a victim to the collective consciousness that I might have participated in or created a while ago. I am choosing to create something different. Consciously choosing to create something different.
Hey, Jerry?
Mm-hmm.
When you said that, my mind goes, and I think we all remember it, when Martin Luther King Jr. said, and he articulated this so succinctly, and it galvanized all of America, I have a dream.
Mm-hmm.
The vision, this vision that, you know, in terms of then, when he said that, there was the appearance of not that dream, but he had this dream, and he articulated it and galvanized, and that dream got steam. And I just remember, I'm just paraphrasing, which was just for me that's so telling, that I may not be there with you once that dream is realized. And that just gives me goosebumps, man, because, you know, because he's and it gives me shivers, man, because it's like he was this conduit for spirit to work through him as this channel, like this dream of galvanizing where all folks, everyone is created equal. But he truly, truly believed that. And it takes that back to what you're just saying in terms of world peace. Do I really, really, really believe that's possible? You know, and if it just takes me back, Jerry.
Beautiful. And if you listen to that whole speech, that up until the moment he said, I have a dream, it was kind of, I wouldn't say boring, but it lacked passion. And something flipped when he said those words, I have a dream. And then after that, you could not not listen to it. It grabbed you by the nuts, okay? And there was no other place to go except this man is, he is not speaking the truth. He is the truth in this moment. Free at last, free at last.
Yes.
Thank God Almighty, I'm free at last.
Yes.
Tapped into a higher consciousness. Tapped into a higher con. That was not Martin Luther King's Jr. speaking. That was God speaking through his instrument. That's why the words are so powerful. Why they carry so much meaning. Why they go far beyond the thinking mind, far beyond thought, far beyond emotion, because that's not what I'm talking about. And he expressed it so beautifully. He said, I might not be there when you reach the promised land, but it doesn't matter. It does not matter because I'm not afraid of dying. Because when I die, well, the only thing that's happening when I die is that I just don't have a body anymore. But the truth that I'm speaking here for you and with you and to you will never die. It can't. Because it is the truth with a capital T.
Jerry,
Yes.
isn't it kind of ironic that at the time when all of these incredible enlightened people like Martin Luther King, Gandhi, Jesus, you can just go on and on, who have spoken their most powerful statements and then they pass out of the body. Some thing happens, and it's like they have come to say what they have to say and do and pass it on.
Abraham Lincoln
Right.
shot dead. Gandhi shot dead.
John Kennedy had his moment.
JFK, RFK shot dead. Now that's one way of looking at it. And I'm
It's
sure
like maybe what they said might not have continued to be as powerful had they continued living.
could very well be. I am willing to give up my life to get this message across because that's just the way it works. Where are we at here? It's meditation time. Okay, all of you innocents. I'm going to take a few minutes to meditate. So I'm going to ask you to put your stuff down. You get comfortable in your spot. And close your eyes if you like. The rhythm of your breath, the rhythm of your heartbeat. We have spoken this morning about words that have been expressed, ideas that have been expressed, which have essentially raised the level of vibration and consciousness of the world. That's why those words can't be put in a box. And here's the truth, too. As you listen to those words, those ideas, you are lifted up as well. And as you are lifted up, so are others as well. And you have allowed that to happen. We have raised the level of the collective consciousness to a higher point. And here's the secret. Once you have turned up the volume, you can't turn it back down again. The light has never gone out, nor will it. And so we let ourselves to be filled with light. The light of your higher consciousness, touching every cell and fiber of your being, physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. And rest in that space for a moment or so. And know that we have changed the world. And then, no matter what the outside world appearances might be, that love and light and grace and joy and gratitude will always be expanding. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Back to the rhythm of your breathing, the beating of your heart. Deep breath, stretch a bit. You can open your eyes when you're ready.
Thank you for a powerful morning, Jerry.
Thank you, Jerry. Thank you, everyone.
And Jim.
Everyone.
Before you sign out this morning, I am working on doing a new book study group on either Wednesday or Friday evening, same time, 7 o'clock. And I'm looking for suggestions of a book or books that you might want to use. So just kind of keep that in mind. Whatever you might come up with, let me know by email and we'll see where we go from there, okay?
So is that in addition to Tuesday and Sunday, Jerry?
Yes, in addition to.
Great, great. Oh,
Oh my God. Ooh,
we are
wow.
blessed.
Blessed. Thank you,
Blessed.
Jerry. Wow.
Let me know what you come up with, okay?
Busy.
Okay.
Thank you.
Take
Love
care.
Thanks
y'all.
for the class today.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jerry.
Hey,
Thanks,
Jerry.
Jerry.
Have a
Thanks,
great,
Rosie.
great week, everyone.
Oh, yeah. And
There are a
by the
couple
way,
people who are.
Margo's celebration of life is going to be next Saturday at 4 o'clock at Unity. Hope to see you there when you, if you can make it.